Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to
Ray and Tay Today, talking sports with friends.
Ray and Tay Today, talking
sports radio on the dial. Check us out, we'll make you smile.
Ray
and they spit it, don't play, and we're talking nothing but the NFL and NBA, MLB, college football.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray Paul Rayside.
And I'm Tay Eric Taylor, and we are talking sports. Hyped up. Give us a call, 718-664-9098. Like always, hit us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out the website, rayandtaytoday.com. Like always, we are talking NFL, some NBA, NFL playoffs, everything's hyped up. We got some breaking news. And, you know, we got to take a minute, man. In sports, we got to honor one of our fallen heroes. And rest in peace to Stuart Scott of age 49, lost his battle with cancer yesterday. Ray, before we get to the other stuff, let's just take care of this real quick, man. You know, you got the booyahs, you got all the different stuff. And like Rich Eisen said, he wrote on the sheet, booyah with a W, not booyah, booyah. And, you know, Stuart meant a lot to all of us. He's a trailblazer. I mean, you got Obama, Kobe, LeBron, all these people reaching out. Moment of silence before NFL playoffs and all the NBA games last night. Tonight, Notre Dame and the Tar Heels. Give us one of your good memories and one of your thoughts about someone who started ESPN in 93. And him and Rich Eisen and Dan Patrick and Scott Van Pelt held down SportsCenter like nobody else.
They sure did. You know, first I'll tell you what was interesting is I didn't realize how much hate mail and how much people hated on him. And all he was trying to do was be himself and bring a little bit of what is now common, you know, some flavor to SportsCenter and to the sports world. So even if you don't like him and you don't like his style, I didn't realize how much hate mail he got and how much negativity he got. Now, most of his feedback, I would imagine, was positive, but I didn't realize how much he had to endure.
Yeah, you know, no, Rich Eisen spoke about it. And what's fascinating, you know what it is? When you're living in the time, you're not always aware of the time. But remember, 93 – when he first came on ESPN2 and Sports Night and then 93, 94 and SportsCenter, you know, we like to think as a world and a country and a nation we're so evolved, but we still had a lot of issues. And sports was predominantly and always presented very vanilla by Caucasian men. And it was more, you know, reading the copy straightforward and just straight shooting. Stu brought in the barbershop, brought in the block, and he didn't just make it cool and bring in vernacular from, you know, R&B and hip-hop music, make it cool just for young black kids. He made it cool for young people in general and everybody that didn't feel like sports was being presented or spoken to them. And, you know, he wasn't just catchphrases. The man was a beast at his job, and then he put that on top of it. So it's just great. And, you know, it's a pleasure to honor him, and you just thank him. Quick small story, you know, he had the same agent as me for a second in New York City, Jackie Harris, and she was a great lady. And so I haven't spoken to her, but I'm sure she was, pretty devastated by it. You know, when he was starting off early in the early days of ESPN, his agent was Jackie Harris. So just fantastic. So we say that. Rich Eisen, Scott Van Pelt, Dan Patrick, Michael Wilbon, they all did great jobs honoring him. I still love the PhD, player hater degree, and the cooler than the other side of the pillow because, yo, that was flavor, man. It was great. So, you know, listen, he's trailed a blaze for all of us and even for Ray and Tay. Ray, we have some breaking news. Did you get it for the NBA? We're going to talk NBA at the end of the show, but we got to talk about this right now.
Break it down.
So it looks like they're still working things out, but it looks like a three-team deal between the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and our New York Knicks. So the Knicks are going to send J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert to the Cavaliers. as part of the deal, Alex Kirk and Lou Almison look like they're going, they don't say where they're going yet, maybe to the Knicks, and I think the Thunder getting Dion Waiters? So,
wow.
You know, it's just breaking. It's they're working it out. I know LeBron is out. Carmelo's out. We were going to, you know, talk about that later, and we'll talk about NBA standing. Some great games tonight, obviously, with the Bulls. I think it's the Bulls-Rockets. You got the Warriors hosting the Thunder in a big matchup. So you'd be interested to see if these guys are – obviously, they probably won't be in the lineup. But, Ray, that's pretty big. I mean,
you know what? I didn't know the details, but now that I do, it's funny because I feel like everybody benefits except the Knicks. But the Knicks did like J.R. Smith, so they got rid of him. I felt like they could have done better for Iman Shumpert, maybe. But the Cavs have always wanted to move Dion Waiters, it feels like, since he was a rookie out of Syracuse. And Oklahoma City gets their poor man's replacement for James Harden, who, it turns out, you and I were both wrong on this one, that they should have never traded him. So,
oh, and Reggie Jackson's involved, too. Reggie Jackson's going. So maybe the Knicks.
The Knicks?
Yeah, maybe the Knicks. Oh, if Cleveland could get both of those guys. Wow. So it's looking like it's six players. It's all going to get worked out. So we'll maybe when it's official end of the show, maybe we'll have it for you. But that's so, you know, right before the All-Star break, a couple weeks away, you know, that Cleveland thing, I kind of felt that they had to make a move, but you just don't know, you know, what size they could get. And I don't know if they're getting – oh, and Dallin Bear was released.
Oh, wow. The Knicks released Dallin Bear.
Yeah, I'm getting
– okay.
Oh, man, Ray, this is wild. And it's funny because, you know, almost, you know, was
well,
trying to get Ian Bagley to come on.
Because you know me, I told you there's a moratorium on talking Knicks until they win 10 games.
And another loss last night. You know, it's just not going to happen. But let's work our way. We'll get to the NBA towards the end of the show, and we're going to talk about some of the best brothers in the NBA. So that's kind of fun because you got like five, six, maybe seven sets of brothers currently in the NBA. That's got to be an all-time record. Yeah, that's my brother. I mean, and I'm talking not a brother, your blood brother. But let's work our way backwards. We got to talk about – we'll get into the matchups for next week. We'll briefly touch them. But I think we've got obviously controversy with this last game, 24-20. How about them Cowboys? They beat the Detroit Lions at home. You know, only one road team won, and that was the Ravens. Dean Blandino admitted that two things were wrong, but they had discretion, the referees. One, if you don't call the pass interference or if you pick up the flag, they should have called defensive holding before he got, you know, even to the pass interference. Hitchcock or Hitchings, he grabbed the jersey.
Yeah.
And then Dez Bryant comes off the sidelines with his helmet
without
off.
A helmet on.
Without a helmet. Now, they said only players that are on the field, if they take off their helmet, it's mandatory that you have to put a flag. If they're off this field on the sidelines, it's with discretion. But, Ray, come on. You think he said something sweet to the referee? I feel like that's not definitely what turned the game. But if they had a first down there, that drive continues, and maybe they put up three more points. So the Cowboys
like
still would have had to score the touchdown. But I don't know. That's a hard one to swallow for Lions fans. You must admit that.
That is a hard one. But you know what, though? It is, and Lions are probably saying to themselves, well, we messed up on so many dimensions because, first of all, the ball was underthrown by Matt Stafford, right? So it wasn't a good throw. So, yes, they should have had the penalty. But remember, after that, they had the 8-yard punt.
Yeah,
right?
You can't do that.
Nobody knew that it was going to be an 8-yard punt. Other people said they should have gone for it on fourth down. But if I'm Detroit, I'm upset at the refs. I'm upset at myself. I'm up 14-0 at the half. I have all the momentum. And then they gave up that huge, what is the 83-yard pass.
Well, right before the half, Terrence Williams
right
scored.
Before
yeah.
the half, which made
right.
the game, because they were about to be up 14-0, and they got the ball to start the second half. So they should have been able to lock that game down. So if I'm Detroit, I'm really upset at my
Oh,
team.
Definitely. And remember, Terrence Williams, he only had 3 receptions for 92 yards, but 2 of them were touchdowns.
2 touchdowns.
He got open on that scramble where Romo had all that time and got that 1 touchdown. And honestly, on the big touchdown to end the half, like right before the half, he – you know, looking like a sort of a waggle or a post there, he should not have been able to catch it, and he should have been tackled. To catch it and then break through and run for a touchdown, that was huge. Terrence Williams, to me, was the MVP for the Cowboys for the game, without question. So that was huge to me. I was impressed. You know, the game had a weird feel. You felt like it was a slugfest. Anybody could have won it. Romo did his thing. Stafford actually, you know, played well. The one interception, but 323 yards, 28 for 42. That's really not bad at all. Let me ask you a question with Detroit. And I want to ask you this. We'll talk about this with all the games and the losers, right? Because we'll definitely talk plenty about the winners and the Packers, Cowboys. But with Bell and Bush, and you're going forward, and obviously they're going to try to keep Sue. The receiving core is fine, even as a third receiver. You like Fuller. Are they sort of – now, Bush, you know, wasn't healthy all year. Bell was in and out of the lineup. They got Theo Reddick. Are you happy with those three backs, or do they need someone a little bit more dynamic? What do you think about the Lions? What's missing? How do they get past the first round next year?
I think the major problem with Reggie Bush is a problem that can't be solved, which is that he's just injury prone. I think a healthy Reggie Bush and Joyce Bell and Riddick together give
is
you
good
a
enough.
Dynamic is good enough.
Yeah.
The problem is I can't be assured that after a 16-game schedule that they'll all be there, and especially Reggie Bush, the most dynamic of them, will be there. Because I think they found themselves a little star in Golden Tate. It was killing me how Golden Tate, with not much athletic ability and not much physical, you know, prowess compared, like, he's an NFL player and he's a great, you know, young
yeah.
receiver coming to his own. But when you look at Calvin Johnson has all the physical God-given gifts, and Golden Tate doesn't. But what Golden Tate does do is he works at his craft. He's you know, he's like that old Wiley veteran.
He moves the chains.
You
could easily say that Golden Tate and Steve Smith Sr. were the two best free agent signings of the offseason, without a doubt.
For sure. Look, and if Eric Ebron turns out to be a player, then I think that running back core is
well,
fine.
The issue, you know what the issue is, Ray? It's the offensive line. Let's be honest. Stafford was sacked, the most this season, I think, in the NFL, and they didn't get big holes for the running backs. I think the offensive line – they need to build it up like the Cowboys. I mean, look, they're averaging 4.6 for Bush, and Bell was 3.6 a carry. But for the whole season, I don't think that line, they run block okay. Their pass blocking is not that great. So to me, their first-round pick needs to be an alignment, and they need to sign a free agent. But you got to keep Sue. Do you keep Sue? You don't let Sue go, do you? I don't do the franchise tag. That's too much. But you got to work out a good signing bonus and keep him for the long haul. He was double-teamed all day, man. He creates such a miss. He's amazing.
He does, but then again, he was an inch away from being suspended for this game. He's on the NFL commissioner's radar list.
I don't know what you do with him mentally. That is something they have to figure out. He was cool for most of the season. Caldwell seems to be the right guy there. He got them over the hump. I just think they need a couple more pieces. Look, there's no shame in making the playoffs and losing, and we'll talk about that in you know, the AFC with the Bengals. But, you know, it's a very difficult thing, and I think Romo said it really well yesterday in a press conference. He was like, that was a good football team that we just beat. And he's like, you know, to, you know, make the playoffs and then even to advance, he's like, this is not easy. You know, and you can have a good team and still lose. So I like Romo in saying that, and I like how the Cowboys look. I think Rod Marinelli, a defensive coordinator, You know, he was 0-16 with the Lions as the head coach. He might not be a head coach, but he's like Rex Ryan. He's one heck of a DC, Ray. He did a great job with this defense.
And remember, this defense was the worst of all time almost last year, and they didn't change much. Not only that, but they lost DeMarcus Ware to the Broncos. And they lost Sean Lee in the preseason to the injury. And their first round, and Carr hasn't been playing that well. And they've got a bunch of, you know, questions. They had a bunch of question marks going into the season. So,
oh, and
yeah,
their boy from LSU, Morris Claiborne. That's the guy.
Claiborne is under
no show.
Six overall.
So
pick.
It's an amazing job. Just amazing.
Let's
talk about the early game on Sunday in the AFC. 26-10, the Colts take care of business. Without doubt, Andrew Luck just lit it up, 376. And, you know, it's surprising out of all that, Reggie Wayne was like 1 for 12 yards and a touchdown. Your boy Heron did a little bit on the rushing, you know, got you the touchdown. I think what's unfortunate about this, and T.Y. Hilton, you know, he came back healthy, 6 for 103. But what's really sad is that it's not Andy Dalton or Marvin Lewis's fault. I'm sorry. And we'll talk about it with my Steelers. You can't win without your guns. If you said the Cowboys wouldn't have Witten and Dez Bryant, they're not winning. If they didn't have DeMarco Murray, they would. I don't know if they'd won that game. Well, it's the same thing with Le'Veon Bell, and it's the same thing with A.J. Green and Jermaine Gresham. That was – it was hard to watch, and the fact that they were 13-10 at the half, I thought that was a yeoman's job, and they just couldn't do anything in the second half. And maybe they didn't give Jeremy Hill the ball enough. But to be honest, I think they just, you know, overstacked it. You know, Dalton wasn't great, 18 for 35. But honestly, there was no way that the Bengals were going to win that game. I know you picked them, but I don't think you knew that both those guys were going to be 100% out. And, you know, 13 carries for 47 yards, that's, you know, that's the best Hill could give you. I would have given them maybe some more carries because you only run the ball 21 times, but they were down.
I thought AJ Green was going to play. And I give Cincinnati credit for being in the mix. But mark my words on Dalton and even on Marvin Lewis. You know,
they're not going anywhere.
You say that, but you can't keep losing in the first round in the NFL, man. It's too competitive a business to keep
it
losing.
It is,
in the
right?
First
but,
round.
Okay, but they've been there like 4 years in a row. Since Marvin Lewis has been there, they've been a winning organization and franchise. They've been hit hard with the injury bugs going back to Carson Palmer days. And how many other teams in NFL, you look at Buffalo, all these other franchises, the Jets, they wish they were the Bengals. They're not in the playoffs every year. So this team is close. When you've got a good defense and then you've got a young running back, two young great running backs, they're fine with Giovanni and Hill. I would get another receiver because I think Sanu is not a solid two. Gresham's got to still do it at defense. I think another offensive lineman and, you know, maybe one more corner. Those guys are getting a little long in the tooth, Pac-Man and your boy Terrence Newman. But I think the Bengals are close. You know, and they drafted Darquez Denard. So, you know, they're going to be okay. I just think Dalton – if you get rid of him, who's going to be quarterback? Brian Hoyer?
Well, that's the problem.
So you can't.
In the NFL with these quarterbacks. Eli Manning, you know, RG3.
Yeah,
Jay
you're
Cutler,
stuck. Jay Cutler, you're stuck. Those guys
Andy
are good
Dalton.
Enough.
Again, maybe you trade those four guys for each other and they get a fresh start.
Ray, be fair. All four of those guys, they're all better than Trent Dilfer. And he's got jewelry.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
Or Brad Johnson.
Right, but those are the exceptions, though. Those are the two exceptions that just managed the game. All other quarterbacks, you know, in the last 25, 30 years, you know, Brett Favre and Elway and Brees and Manning and, you know, two Manning and Aikman and Brady, of course. These guys carried their teams. They made positive plays. They won new games. So Dilfer and Brad Johnson were the two guys that were just caretakers because they had phenomenal defenses.
But isn't it fair to say that Russell Wilson manages? I mean, he's exceptional at doing it.
He's more on the making plays than he is on managing.
Okay, that's fair. Right, Dalton doesn't. Yeah, Dalton and Cutler don't make plays. I think RG3 can. Russell Wilson is probably. right now he's the best in the league at doing it, except for maybe potentially the gentleman that won on Saturday, and we'll talk about that, and Killer Cam Newton, because that guy, even when he played bad, they, you know, the Panthers, I mean, still. So let's work our way back to talk about Saturday night. And you know it hurt, 30-17. All year, this Ravens team, the way they overcame and persevered, it's a credit to John Harbaugh, and I think he is underrated as a coach. He's probably top five in the league to me. He's amazing. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we stopped Forsett. We, you know, the wide receivers didn't kill us. Our corners did not play well. And not having Le'Veon Bell, who pass blocks, he's a receiver, he's, you know, the third down clutch guy, he's a great running back, he turns 5-yard plays into 20-yard plays. It was too much, Ray. It was too much. And Harris and Dre Archer and Tate, you know, they couldn't do that. It was really too much. And it's not an excuse. The Ravens outplayed them. That pass rush, what Suggs did by himself, him, Nada, and Dumervil, the interception was amazing. The secondary actually stepped up and played well because they haven't been good all year. But, you know, Brown and Heath Miller, 117 yards, 76 yards. Big Ben played well. Wheaton had 66 yards. So it's not like they weren't doing big things. Even Martavis Bryant had 61 yards. So guys were – they were doing stuff. It's just they didn't get touchdowns, and at the end of the day, it was too much posse. Baltimore, and they shouldn't have brought Big Ben back in. I thought Gronkowski was about to get that last touchdown. I thought Ben should have stayed out. He was too woozy and came in and threw the bad interception.
Yeah,
you know, it was too little too late. But
protocol, so, I don't know if it was working there in Pittsburgh. They kind of short-tracked Ben back in the game. I hope that, you know, they didn't sacrifice his health. Now, granted, he threw that one interception and made it the game over. But, yeah, I didn't want to see him back in the game like that. It looked like he got rung up pretty nicely. So,
yeah.
You know what? But Baltimore was the better team that day. And,
yes, they were.
You know, it's hard to take Le'Veon Bell and his 80 receptions and his, what do you want, like 1,300 yards.
Yeah.
You know, and I asked you, remember, I said, oh, God, I'm like, how do you overcome Le'Veon Bell? And you said, you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And it's not that easy. You know, it's not that easy with 1 week to replace a Le'Veon Bell. And
nah, it was rough. But also, this guy, man, Steve Smith Sr. and Joe Flacco, 101 yards, 5 receptions. You know, the Torrey Smith touchdown was big, almost had a second one. Owen Daniels came through with the, you know, huge reception and 70 yards, 4 receptions. You know, that's veterans right there. I mean, Daniels and Smith, they signed in free agency, and I thought both of them would be a factor, and I loved their offense, thinking it would be with Ray. Forsett is versatile and pretty good. You know, he didn't do much against us, but you know, when you get 101 yards out of Steve Smith, man, and you know, he's an emotional leader, I think, honestly, what we've got to do, the two guys I got to give all the credit or the most credit to are, you know, besides the coach, it's Flacco and Suggs, because they are the captains of the offense and the defense, and they just they do it, man. And let me tell you, we'll talk about it, but going up to New England, that's going to be one heck of a game. And, you know, I got the Patriots in the Super Bowl, but this Raven team knows how to play them. And the way that they're designed and they get pressure. Remember, Big Ben can run. Tom Brady can't move nowhere. And they get a lot of pressure, right? So.
And that's the same team that punched them in the mouth, what is it, 4 years ago? And
twice they beat them, yeah.
Up in
two out of
New
three.
England, and when you get Brady pressure, especially pressure up the middle and not as back,
woo, is he back?
On the outside.
That's what I was telling you. You were like, I don't know if Nada will be ready. I'm like, are you crazy? He's ready. He's
been
chomping at the bit.
Yeah,
chomping
four
at
games,
the bit.
He just got hungrier and hungrier.
Oh, that was great rest for him. Remember, it wasn't anything crazy. It was just Adderall, you know, so he could focus more. If anything, he got fresh legs, man. Everybody better beware of the Ravens. That guy's got fresh legs. So let's talk about the first game. ESPN gets to broadcast their first playoff game, which is wild. All these years, you know, you remember ABC, all these other networks, but ESPN, their first playoff game, that was kind of surprising. 27-16. Look, they lost yards on the last play. So 78 total yards, it's sort of, you know, weird stat. The worst ever in playoff history offensively. You know, Fozzie Whitaker steps up. Cam does his thing, but the guy that I told you I thought would do it, and he really did, and he's healthy, Jonathan Stewart. When you get 24 carries for 123, buck 23 and a touchdown, he's back, and he's back to being, you know, a really good back. And if D'Angelo gets healthy each, you know, week two, he'll contribute a bit. I like this Panther team. Remember, they lost to the Seahawks 13-9 in Carolina earlier this year. I don't think either team was at their best. If nothing else, they'll make it a bloodbath defensive game. You know, the Seahawks might win 13-9, 13-10, but that defense is good. But I think before you could give the Panthers defense so much props, the Bruce Arians, I would have tried Logan Thomas. He couldn't have done any worse than Lindley. They should have maybe run it a little bit more. 15 carries was nothing for me. It was just ugly, and it was sad. They got to find a way, if they re-sign Fitzgerald, even with Palmer, they have to get Fitzgerald the ball more. Because even though he doesn't have the breakaway speed, you could have a guy on him. His hands are so strong, and he's such a savvy veteran. He's still open, and he'll make clutch catches. And so I was just disappointed in the whole everything that they did, because I felt like the game plan could have been better. And this is from someone who I think we both feel is Coach of the Year. What are your thoughts about what happened? And also Keekly, him and Davis are just they're a dynamic duo of linebackers, right?
You know, it's funny because I tweeted out about that, and I said linebackers can still win you a game in the NFL, mm-hmm. because it's become an unsexy position. Unless you're a pass rushing, you know, essentially a 3-4 linebacker, you know, an edge rusher,
yeah.
Linebacker's not sexy anymore. But Luke Keekly and David, you know, they basically won that game. I am not a huge Cam Newton fan, and I think that he hasn't been given the weapons, but I'm still, you know who I am impressed with? I'm impressed with Greg Olsen. Everybody wrote him off and
yeah.
said, all right, he's past his prime, and, you know, he was an athlete stud coming out of Miami. He did his thing on offense, had a great season. You know, finally they got something out of Jonathan Stewart, D'Angelo Williams, not so much. But that Carolina team is so confusing to me. I don't know what to think of them. But
and the rookie
played
good too, right? Kelvin Benjamin played good too, the rookie.
Yeah, he had a great season. Part of that, you know, historic. We should do a segment on that historic rookie wide receiver.
Yeah, we're going to have to research the stats, because I don't think you've ever had – I mean, and even guys that didn't have big seasons like Bruce Ellington and some of the other receivers, but they're going to be good in the future. I mean, there was literally 16 wide receivers, or maybe 14 wide receivers, that going forward are going to be ballers in the NFL. And that's just amazing to me. This draft was sick. That's crazy.
The takeaway from, and we both said it, I think you agree with me, that I thought, you know, once the Cardinals clinched, they were going to lose out. So
yeah.
I think you look at it as, yeah, they could have done better in those last three games, but at the end of the day, you know, you're on your third string quarterback, you're on your second and third string running back, your wide receivers are basically underachieved this year, your defense is kind of overachieving, so at the end of the day, you got to call it a good season for the Arizona Cardinals. A lot of good things to build on. Look at the glass half full instead of the glass half empty. Would have been interesting to make a run this year because the Super Bowl is in Glendale. But you know what? Get ready for next year. The problem, though, is that, like you said, some of the issues, especially on offense, are fundamental, right? Carson Palmer getting up there in age. Now he's coming off another injury, another major injury. The wide receiver situation with Floyd and Fitzgerald, you're not getting them the ball enough. You found yourself a star in Andre Ellington. But you know what? Toward the end of the season, the running game got shut down. So,
and he's lighting the butt, too. He's like Reggie Bush. Ellington, you can't rely on. They need a big back to pound it. And I don't know if it's Grice or Stephen Taylor, Grice from ASU. You know, I don't know if those guys are really ready. Obviously, the issues with Jonathan Dwyer, I don't know if he's coming back or if he's just done in the NFL or with the Cardinals. But you're right. They've got – but, you know, they're close. That defense, they're going to get better because they're going to get healthier. When they get Dockett and Washington back next year – wow, Ray. And they still got that secondary. They're going to be tough.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to be Bruce Arians. You know what I mean? He's a fun guy. He's a great players coach, and he's got himself a nice little team. And who knows? You know, if Seattle goes on to win another one, they might. And they got to pay Russell Wilson next year, right? So they might have some turnover again on that team because they're not going to have enough money.
Yeah,
for everybody.
A lot of the guys are locked up, but that's where, you know, they start to lose some more bench, you know, and that's going to be difficult. And, you know, that's where it gets fascinating because remember Browner, he's gone, you know, to New England, and they lost Bryant and Clemens to Jacksonville. So you start to lose, you know, but when you get the main core of Bennett and Bobby Wagner, you talk about linebackers, Irvin and Bobby Wagner, they're right up there with Davis, Tommy Davis and Luke Kuechly. The Seattle linebackers are no joke too. And, you know, the poor Patriots, every year their guys get hurt, you know, from whether it's Collins or Chandler Jones or, you know, Mayo. I mean, you know, those guys can't seem to stay healthy for the Patriots, but they're tough. So let me ask you this, right? Going forward, a couple things. We got to talk about these coaches. You know, some of your thoughts, there's a whole bunch of them, but just with these matchups, out of the teams that moved forward, give me one team and quarterback that you would trust to potentially pull off an upset and win in the next round out of the four that won: Ravens, Panthers, Cowboys, and Colts.
So, you know, I don't like Cam Newton. So I'm not a Cam Newton fan in the regular season or in the playoffs. So I don't like him. I will say, but Flacco was already won a Super Bowl, right? I will say that, you know, so here's the thing. Between Andrew Luck and Tony Romo, I'm throwing it out there. Who would you want in the fourth quarter? You're down four, so you need a touchdown. And both of those guys can make plays. And both of those guys, you know, could use another win in the playoffs. Now, they're at different places in their career, right? But both of those guys need to get another round deeper into the playoffs to kind of solidify their positioning as elite. Obviously, Tony Romo later in his career, and Andrew Luck, you know, he's been out early. So who are you picking between that? I might have to say, and I've not been for years, I might have to say Tony Romo is really impressing me because the Dallas Cowboys, and I texted you, I was so frustrated. The Dallas Cowboys made all the same mistakes that they always make. They run into the kicker on the 1 yard. On the
I'm going to tell the audience,
five.
I'm trying to encourage Ray, and I'm telling him deep water faith and calm down.
Oh
I mean,
God.
He was losing it.
Because they made all the same mistakes and then the procedure penalty. And
can I tell you something? Can I tell you something? When that punt went down, I was like, Kwame's up there doing something, man. I was like, that. I mean, you never would see an 8-yard punt in the playoffs in not bad weather. I mean, that was you couldn't write that script. Oh man. So basically, your answer is Romo. Is your answer Romo?
Romo.
I'd have to agree with that. The one thing I will say about the Colts.
You saying to watch out for Killer Cam?
No, I'm not saying that against Seattle, not as a quarterback. I like what their defense can do in the running game, but to me, nobody's beating the Seahawks. But what I would say is they're going to put up a heck of a fight and make it close. But what I would say is the Cowboys, they can mess with Green Bay because of maybe keeping Aaron off the field, and I don't believe he's going to be 100%. So there's potential there. And then I'm not sure if the machine of the Denver Broncos is really revved up. And I think the Colts, oddly enough, without a real running game, are finding ways. And I got to believe Reggie Wayne will be healthier and better next week. And I love – no one talks about the Vontae Davis and the other corner on the other side, the Colts secondary and the way the Colts defense gets after it. And Pep Hamilton is a very good – he's interviewing for jobs, offensive coordinator. So I wouldn't sleep on the Colts. The Colts – and I can't sleep on the Ravens. So to me, you know, three of those teams might have a legit shot in the Cowboys, Ravens, and Colts. None of them – I mean, all of these four teams could wind up losing next week. But I would put my money that one of them pulls off an upset. One of the four that have advanced, I can't say who, but I'll say I would definitely place that bet if it was on Vegas that one of the four will get a win.
The one thing I will say is home field advantage is in full effect this weekend because it looks like it's going to be brutally cold this week in the Northeast, right? So New England's going to have home field. Green Bay's going to have home field advantage.
Yeah, but Baltimore can handle the cold. That's not big to Baltimore.
I'm not saying it's like, you know, a South Florida team. I'm just saying that this is why these teams earned it, and this is why they get to play in their home field. And, you know, every one of these four fields is a huge home field advantage. I'm not saying they can lose, but I'm saying, you know, between Seattle, Denver, Green Bay, and New England.
Great. They have great fans.
Weather, the history. You know,
great fans. So let's talk about some of these jobs. I mean, so we still have the six jobs. Marone is looking like him and Dan Quinn are favorites in New York. I actually like Dan Quinn a lot, and I actually think Bowles, Todd Bowles, Marone, and Dan Quinn are the three of them will have jobs. I'm fascinated even what you think about Shanahan potentially with the Niners, Raiders, and Bills getting interviews. And do you think the even younger offensive coordinators, well, Josh McDaniels is being, you know, checked out. Pep Hamilton, his name's come up. The kid from the Lions defense, first year coordinator, Terrell Austin, who
right.
did a
and
great
Dallas
job
Bevel.
With the, yeah. And Bevel.
Playoffs is obviously,
right. And then Adam Gase from the Broncos. What's the one and you know guy or who's going to surprise you? Now, obviously, the Bears want to get a GM first, but they're saying they're starting on Saturday with Todd Bowles, so that means they might have a GM in place this week. What's the young guy that is going to be sort of new, like the Tomlin? You know, or, you know, that's going to step in and just, boom, take over the coaching ranks by storm.
So, obviously, Marone doesn't count because he's going to get a job and he did a great
job.
Yeah,
and he's been impressive. People liked him before in the interview. So
he was just savvy enough to put in that change of ownership clause so he can get out of that contract because he knew it was coming and apparently, you know, wanted the flexibility. I like this kid in Denver. I mean, I think Darrell Bevel will turn out to be a decent head coach, too, kind of like Bradley. He needs some more ammunition down there in Jacksonville. But I think this kid Gates might surprise people. You know, whenever you have Peyton Manning as your quarterback, it's really hard to tell if you're any good because Peyton Manning just kind of coaches his own offense and runs his own show, right?
So right.
It's hard
he's
to
like
tell.
OC like, himself.
Right, exactly. Like Moore in Indianapolis. Was he really the man, or was he just, you know, feeding Jimmy Peyton Manning his coffee and donuts? Tom Moore. But I think he was doing much more than that. I'm being a little facetious.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I have a feeling that this kid is going to be pretty decent. And he seems like a decent offensive mind. And maybe he'll do what's the guy in San Diego? Riley. Maybe he'll pull a Riley like in San Diego.
Like Mike McCoy. Remember, Mike McCoy was with Manning and went to the Chargers, and he's done a great job.
Yeah. So, I'd go with the offensive coordinator in Detroit. That's the guy. The one who intrigues me the most, though, is Josh McDaniels because he's not DJ Ralph McDaniels. But you would think
never
he was
that.
Because, remember, in one year – He lost Tom Brady and Matt Castle was awesome, and then he went to Denver and kind of fizzled, and then they put Tebow on him. So it'd be interesting to see if he's humble
And yeah, because he was a mess in Denver. He drove that ship off the face of the earth. That was a mess.
Right, it was a mess. But I got to tell you, I don't know who would have done much better. Again, I'm not a huge, you know, John McKenzie fan, but I don't know who would have done much better if you had Kyle Orton and then transitioning to Tim Tebow, and maybe he thought he could get more out of Tebow than Tebow could actually do in the NFL. But once you put your eggs in that basket, you were, that was a formula for disaster. Anyway.
But so, wasn't Tebow was Mike Smith and McCoy. But Daniels was gone, remember? I think that's when he was already headed towards the Rams, I thought.
Oh, he had him.
Fox was the coach with Tebow. He McDaniels was there the first year, but when Tebow played year two, remember Tebow didn't play first year. Tebow played year two, took over, and that was with Foxy.
I think McDaniels pushed to draft him. And
oh, no, you're right about that. Yeah, he pushed to draft him, yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, he wanted to draft him. See what Josh McDaniels does and if, in fact, he lands a head coaching job. I don't think Rex Ryan lands a head coaching job. I think he's got to sit out a year. But these head coaches, I think Mike Smith will be fine. I think he'll get another head coaching job. I mean, he did have a 12-4 and a 13-3 season.
You know, it's so funny. That's the one guy you're not hearing about somebody hiring Mike Smith. I'm hearing Shanahan, even Scott Linehan from the Cowboys, the OC. You're hearing Pep Hamilton, all these different names. Obviously, Rex Ryan, Todd Bowles. You're not hearing Mike. I haven't heard Mike Smith anywhere. That's fascinating. And remember that caller we had, the Atlanta Falcons fan. He said Mike Smith is gone and done. And it might be a one and done for Mike Smith.
What do you think? That's hard. At least he accomplished a lot, I thought. He did have a great offense. Well, you know what? It is a knock on a defensive guy when you're given a great offense and you can't get the defense to turn around. Because they've always had poor defenses under him. You know what would be interesting also is Shanahan. That's another interesting saga, right?
Yeah.
Where does he end up?
And he might get they're saying that he might, wherever he goes, he might get his son. And the rumor is he's going to the 49ers. And then bring Kyle to do that pistol that he got at Baylor with RG3 to do it with Kaepernick. And it could get real interesting. Shanahan
wow.
and his son with the Niners. That might
not
be too bad.
So Shanahan back to the AFC West. So that'll be his third team in the AFC West.
And remember,
West.
He was the OC with Young. He was there.
For a year or two, yeah. Interesting.
It's going to be fascinating.
I thought he was done with football, and, I thought his star took a couple of knocks, because it took Terrell Davis to get, John Elway those two Super Bowls, and I thought Shanahan was given a little too much credit in Denver, and, he lost a little bit of that luster when he went to Washington and basically laid an egg.
You know what? I think your boy, from Arizona, and he's going to do well. I think Todd Bowles, former Redskin, right? I think he played for the Redskins and Cardinals, definitely a Redskin. But Todd Bowles, I think he's going to wind up the coach of the Atlanta Falcons or the Chicago Bears. I think that's where he's going. And Frank Reich, I think he might sneak in and get a job, maybe even that Buffalo job. It's going to be fun. We'll talk about it. We'll keep everybody updated. Obviously, we're going to preview the heck out of these divisional. So the wild card weekend's fun, but then this weekend is the best weekend probably in the NFL playoffs in the sense that you got four games both days and you're just, you're chuck full of football. It's a pleasure, and it's, really the eight best teams left. So, it should be – it just should be great football. So, Ray and Tay, we'll have you covered.
We'll preview it on Friday for sure.
And then next Monday we'll be previewing, Ray, the championship between Oregon and Ohio State. I can't wait. That's going to be fun. And we'll get more into that. Our Tar Heels are playing now. I thought that was awesome, too. you know, we talked about the NFL and the NBA, but for Stuart Scott, the Tar Heels tonight before the game had a moment of silence, and, you know, Roy Williams, he used to come down there for Midnight Madness. I thought that was really classy and cool of them. So let's talk hoops. Obviously, we have this, you know, this trade. You know, really, it's all more about the Cavs and the Thunder in terms of what they're trying to do. I think the Thunder need a big win tonight against the Warriors. You know, they're battling with the Pelicans and the Suns for that eighth spot. And right now, you know, they just got to 500, the Thunder. And, you know, I'm a little like, you feel like they're going to be fine. And remember, since LeBron's not been playing, Irving, like, Love missed one game. Kyrie missed one game, but they've lost five out of their last seven for the Cleveland. And it's, you know, he's got to get back. He's got to get back healthy, and, you know, hopefully he'll be, you know, what he should be. But does the Waiters, does he sort of, you know, what does he do in terms of helping, you know, a Thunder team that really needs someone else that can put in some buckets?
Well, they need some punch, and we were waiting for, you know, Stephen Adams, Reggie Jackson, or Jeremy Lamb to do that. And none of them has stepped up consistently, right? Reggie Jackson will do it a little bit, and Lamb will do it a little bit. And Lamb, you could argue, is the youngest for Stephen Adams, too. But he can contribute in other ways. So maybe Dion Waiters comes in there and takes some pressure off of Westbrook and Durant, because both of them are probably going to be on some kind of minutes watch, just, you know, keeping them fresh and you know, making sure, especially Durant, making sure he's healthy, getting ready for that, you know, postseason run. I like the trade in the sense that they've always been looking for that two guard that can score. The problem is, you know, Waiters won't play defense. And, you know, Scotty Brooks is going to want his guys to play some D, and you know, Russell Wilson,
but can he be Jamal Crawford? Can he be that sixth man to come off the bench? Maybe they start Lamb at the two. Can Dion Waiters play with that second unit, you know, with Perkins and him, and, you know, because now Steven Adams
can
is starting, which I like.
Vinny Johnson.
Yeah. You got the ticket.
Oh,
Vinny, don't take me down memory lane with Vinny.
And you know what? And maybe if it's true that the two Knicks go to Cleveland, they are Smith and Montrezl.
I think so. That's
Well, you know what? Maybe playing with LeBron, those knuckleheads can maybe Jared Smith. Those guys can, you know, take some tutelage from LeBron, and he'll put them under his wing, and you put an athlete out there on the wing with LeBron. And then you've got, you know, Tristan Thompson, LeBron, and, you know, J.R. Smith, and Iman Shumpert. You just got a lot more athletic. So, you know, on offense and on defense. And maybe that's what they need with Kyrie leading the break. They get themselves an easy bucket. Offense hasn't really been their problem. Consistent defense has been their problem. Although, you know, the thing is that they're not really listening to the coach. That's another problem. That David Black really, you know, kind of lost them 10, 15 games ago. I hope they get it together, because it's a talented team, and you hope that they'll be a formidable team. And I'm looking forward to the playoffs. I want to see Washington, Toronto, you know, and those guys challenging Cleveland. And because I thought, I think you thought it too, that Cleveland and Chicago would just run away with 1-2.
Yeah, you know what? This is wild, because Reggie Jackson was supposed to be going to the Knicks, and then there's reports where he doesn't want to report to them.
With you? You know, you know,
no, I mean, listen. But I'll say this. The Knicks freed up a lot of money. I mean, getting to waive D'Alembert and being able to ship J.R. Smith in that contract, which still got, I think, two years left on it, maybe, I think.
Yeah, another year, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was big. And, you know, Shumpert, let's be honest, you know, I've talked about this. We've talked about it with Ian Begley. We've talked about it with our boy Edgar Burgos, even with Anthony Donahue. Shumpert has not really – he hasn't developed. You know, you thought he would. Obviously, the injury, he came back, but he has not – the defense is not as great as it was, and the offensive game is just really not there. He couldn't play the backup point, and it's just, you know, and it wasn't really a two or a three solid in terms of giving you some offense. So really the Knicks are just salary dumped and are getting themselves in even a better position because they're like, we're not doing anything this year, so let's really revamp and, you know, Melo, you don't know if he's going to lock it down for the whole season. He's out for a bit. They haven't said, you know, how long. He's obviously so hurt. He's been really just a yeoman trying to play injured. So it's to be determined. But you know what? I give Phil Jackson credit, man, because when you don't think it's possible, Phil does sort of the impossible, getting guys. Now, look, you can, you know, discuss whether or not he should have gotten rid of Chandler because obviously – but I don't think Chandler was happy here anymore. So, and I don't think Chandler was going to work out in this system. So, you know, it is what it is. Let me ask you about what's going on with the Rockets and Bulls. Can the Warriors keep up this pace in terms of just how they're, you know, winning and you know, it's Bogut's still out. You've got Mo Spates balling out of his mind and, you know, hitting, you know, 15-foot jumper. Like, I mean, you know, watching the Warriors the other night, I'm like, look at Mo Spates. He was an offensive weapon. I mean, do you have faith in the whole Warrior team? Obviously, Draymond Green is so much better. And AI, too, Iguodala off the bench, and Barnes has improved. But don't they need another piece, if you're being honest? And what is
it? I don't exactly. That's my problem. Yeah. I don't know who that piece is. Because you would think that the size issue is always going to be an issue, especially given that Bogut is injury-prone and then, you know, foul-prone, too. So in a tight playoff game, you could see him getting foul trouble. Even if you have him healthy, he might not give you, you know, all the minutes that you'd like. So I think Golden is going to come back to the pack in the sense that they have to play teams that I think are more grounded. I think that the, you know, that Western Conference, when you think about the road trip that you have to go on, and Houston and Dallas and San Antonio and the Clippers and OKC and even the bad teams, you know, Denver can give you a little bit of a run for the money. Phoenix is going to be, you know, a 6-7-8, you know, something like that team. So I'm not sure Golden State can keep this pace up, but I am very encouraged by the fact that they're playing D, they're getting more out of Draymond Green than I thought that they would. They are getting size, like I said. They've got some contributors that they didn't really count on going into the season. Obviously, we know their backcourt, and we know the athletes in Harrison Barnes, and we know when David Lee's healthy, what he'll give you. But to get production from these other guys, I think that's huge. That means they go 7-8 deep. And you know what? That's all you need in the playoffs. You know, we learned that 9, 10, 11, that's not good for the playoffs. You need 7 or 8 guys, and that's who you go with. But I'm not quite penciling Golden State into the finals.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see what winds up happening with Reggie Jackson. If he, you know, because I don't know if it would stop the deal, but would that salary, like if he doesn't want to report, would that salary just get washed and the Knicks have even more room? And then would he be, would Reggie Jackson then be a free agent but just could not go back to Oklahoma City?
Well,
because Reggie Jackson could be a nice little piece
but the Knicks
for a couple teams.
Return. I mean, the Knicks won't just trade him and waive him because of his salary. And I don't know if you can waive. If you just waive Gallenberg, then you waive him too. Because when you waive somebody, they still count against your cap.
They're saying, I think, $2 million of it for Gallenberg they got off of.
Okay.
So I don't know what was in the deal or what was in his previous deal.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's going to be interesting. So let's have a little fun. You know, obviously the NBA is where it's at. But we were talking about the brothers. And we've got a couple minutes left. And I think you know, wrapping up our six-show run with our intern, Adam Marchese, who, you know, did a great job, young 13-year-old man, who's you know, really a big sports fan and wanted to do an internship and chose to do it with Ray and Tay. And we're, you know, open and happy, you know, to do internships with, you know, with anybody. And he did a great job. And so this was some of his research. And when you're sort of ranking the brothers, and, you know, it's sort of amazing because remember when Marc Gasol first, you know, sort of came in, he was a throw-in in that Memphis-LA trade. And right now, he you could easily say, Ray, that he might be the best center in the NBA. So obviously the Gasols are the best brothers, averaging 38 points and 19 rebounds and, you know, over six assists and a couple of blocks a game. I guess when you think about the two of them, how impressed are you with Paul Gasol with the Bulls, who's killing it, and then 18 and 11, and then Marc Gasol, who are you ready to say that overall, on both sides and versatility, is he better than Dwight Howard?
Well,
or a notch below?
It's probably more reliable than Dwight Howard, and
okay.
I wouldn't kill you if you said you wanted to build a team around him and you could maybe win a championship with him. I don't think he's better than Dwight Howard. I think Dwight Howard does some things that are just, you know, physically, you know, impossible for other people to do. But he gives you a complete, well-rounded center and won Defensive Player of the Year, even though you had a big issue with that a couple years ago. His brothers got two championships. So, yeah, the Gasol brothers, I got to say, you know, that's a good call on the fact that he was a throw-in. Everybody was like, Kwame Brown and Marc Gasol and Paul Gasol's brother? People were like, what? But it turns out in retrospect that Gasol is quite a little player. So, that trade wasn't that awful.
No, it definitely wasn't. Do you feel, sometimes separate from stats, do you feel like the Lopez brothers, even with all the injuries, and now Robin's hurt this year, but just overall, career and, you know, this season, they're not, either one is doing great. Brooks been in and out, Robin's out. But I think they both have put a good imprint, even this year, almost 25 a game, 13 boards. Brooks been benched, you know, a lot, and so is D. Will. But how do you feel about the Lopez brothers? Would you say currently they're the solid number two?
Solid.
Yeah.
The problem I have with Brooke especially is that he's got all the talent, but A, he doesn't rebound like a big man of his size should, and B, or more importantly, he's just always injured. So, unreliable is kind of the first thing I think about with Lopez. So I can't build my franchise around Brook Lopez. I just can't. So I got to go with younger, you know, youthful guys, you know, Morris twins. We got other
the Plumleys. Well, that's what I was going to say. The next three are all developing, right? You have the Zellers, the Plumleys, and the Morrises. The Morris twins. The Morris twins might be the better of all of them, right?
I tell you who's playing the best out of everybody you named, it might be Mason Plumlee. He is doing big things in Brooklyn. He is definitely surprising me.
Yeah, almost 10 and 7 a game. And, you know, Miles doesn't get the minutes.
He has an impact on the game. Like,
you're right,
you know,
he does.
There's some games where statistically, you know, he'll do like 4 and 4, but there's other games where he's 20 and 10. So,
and he starts now. He's been starting over Brooke, and Garnett's been hurt, and you're right. And I think, again, Ray, that experience from the FIBA World Cup, he's one of those guys, right? And all of those guys, I mean, I don't know if you remember, the minute DeMarcus Cousins came back, Sacramento started winning again. And, like, his first night, he put up, like, 30-something and 17. I mean, DeMarcus, to me, is an all-star this year. And he's balling out of his mind.
I wish
Sacramento could make – you know, the Western Conference needs 10 teams because you want to see OKC, Phoenix, and Sacramento. So this would be the time when we talked about the global playoffs – you know, you would get 10 or 11 from the West and then let the East have the rest. But, you know, you really want to see the Suns, Kings, and the Pelicans and OKC, you know, and that would give you actually, you're talking 12 teams from the West.
Yes, and maybe we start that petition because you know, it's 1 year, 2 years, but it's been, what, 15 years that the Western Conference has been.
It really has.
Head and shoulders better than the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, do you remember when TNT, like, we were sort of surprised when going to the broadcasting, when TNT was like, they did the exclusive, we want the Western Conference Finals, and we're like, wow. But that's when it started, and that was a while ago. And, you know, because the West was, you know, this is back with Rasheed Wallace, Garnett, Chris Webber, you know, Duncan, like, the West has been ridiculous that whole time, and it hasn't faded. So now, obviously, we also have the Teague brothers and the Dragic brothers. Now, Zoran just got his first point the other night, but Goran, who will be a free agent, he's one heck of a player, averaging.
He really is. And
yeah.
Phoenix needs to decide what they're doing. I mean, they got 100 point guards there, but you know,
it's too much.
Eric
it's too
Bledsoe
cute.
Is small. I think you got to keep Dragic and his size, and the fact that they can play together is huge. It bodes really well for the both of them. So,
it's hard because they do love the two of them, and then their bench is Gerald Green and Isaiah Thomas, and the two of them come in, and that is such a boost. You know, you hardly play the three guys together with Isaiah, Bledsoe, and Dragic. It depends on the matchups, but, you know, they're tough. They're tough. They're hard to guard. They're a tough matchup, you know what I mean? Let me ask you this though: can the Zellers can they start to develop?
So I think they're both talented big men in the sense that they do things that 6'10", 6'11" guys don't usually do.
Right, good hands that can shoot and pass.
Yeah, Michael Jordan with his draft pick. I again don't see either of them being more than role players in the NBA.
It's a lack of athleticism. Where the Plumleys are very athletic, the Zellers are not that athletic. Cody is a little bit more than Tyler, but they're not that athletic. Hi, Cody. Yeah, Cody got some hops.
No, I'm saying like when you go ha in the paint.
Oh yeah, he got no ha. You said he
ain't
got no ha.
No ha. Remember, I saw.
He's got a step to the rear, Grand. Brent Poopa's on a rival.
Indiana, and I was just like, damn, this guy's supposed to be the best player in the nation, Miller. I don't know, man. He's getting pushed around in college. I don't like that.
And then. You know, unfortunately, Marquise Teague, he's never really been able to stay with a team and, you know, stuff like that. And I don't know if he's playing with anybody right now, bounced around with the trades, the Bulls, the Nets, and then to the Sixers. But I don't think he's with Philly anymore. But I would say this, Jeff turned out to be one heck of a player. The Atlanta Hawks. But can we just say the number one seed Atlanta Hawks? They got the number one seed right now. They passed Toronto.
With like a, 720 winning percentage, too. They're just winning their games.
Yeah, I think they play, what is it, the Lakers or no, the Clippers tonight. Let me tell you, the Hawks have been on this West Coast road trip, and they're smacking teams up. So I got to give the Hawks a lot of credit, Ray. And it's with really nobody at all.
Nobody in particular.
Yeah. So, look, another great show. You know, we have heavy hearts for, friends to everybody. Like how we talk sports with friends, that's how Stuart Scott made you feel. So prayers out to the Scott family and his daughters. How ironic is this, right? We had the same agent for a bit, and his daughters' names are Taylor and Sydney. My niece's name's Sydney. My last name's Taylor. That's wild, man. So, and he's a Tar Heel fan like us. So you know Tar Heel fans are good people.
For sure.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was very sad. So, great show. We're back. Everybody have a good sports week. Good NBA games. We're going to start, after next week, we're going to really start hitting some college basketball, Ray. That's going to be there have been some good games. We'll catch everybody up with that and start talking about some college hoops because there's some good talent. I think people are sleeping on the talent that's out there right now. And I like our guy Paige for the Tar Heels, too. Pretty good player.
Yeah, Tar Heels had a good showing over the weekend. See what they do coming into the rest of the ACC schedule. But, yeah, we'll start picking up the pace on college. Don't you worry, all you college.
And did you see my Terps, the first Big Ten game? They beat Michigan State.
Yo,
Maryland basketball is back, baby. Yo, Terps. So, Friday, we'll be back strong. NFL playoffs divisional round. Can't wait. And like always, Ray. thanks for telling everybody. Thanks for listening and talking sports with friends, man.
We're out.
We're out. Peace.